Hello, dear Sangha. Welcome. Namaste. Those of you joining us in the room, and to those of you joining on Zoom. This is the first of many, what I hope is weekly Dharma talks with myself, Zach Beach. Nice to meet you all. And we'll be live streaming. So thanks to those of you for joining us on Zoom. And thank you for joining us in the room today. I like to think of these talks as living from the heart, a guide on how we can all live from the heart. And I'll be infusing the different wisdom teachings of which I am grateful to be a part of with you today. I'll also be sharing some stories and sharing some poems. And today's poem is a short one, nice and sweet. It begins like this: We hear more in silence, do more by stopping. Discover more by sitting. Learn more in nothing. Feel more by loosening. Become more by lessening. Gain more by giving. And arrive sooner by slowing. And to begin this talk, I want to ring this magical little object that I have in front of me. If you have one at home, feel free to ring your own little object, whether it's a singing bowl or some tinctures or anything that applies a certain resonance, because Zoom will actually cancel out the noise, but those of us in the room will be able to hear it. Now, if you've ever attended a Dharma talk or a meditation retreat, you've probably noticed we love to ring bells. And I wanted to talk about why we ring a bell and all the different things that might come to mind when you do hear the ringing of the bell. So, first of all, when you do hear the ringing of the bell, it is a call to pay attention. It is a call to come into the here and now. There's a story of a traveler who goes to the yoga ashram. And when the traveler goes to the yoga ashram, he goes right up to the teacher and asks the teacher there, "What is it that's so special about what you all do here?" And the teacher looks at the traveler and says, "Oh, you know, we sit, we stand, we walk, and we eat." And the traveler, not being very impressed by this response, said, "Well, everyone does that." And the teacher responded, "Ah, yes, but when we sit, we know that we are sitting. When we stand, we know that we are standing. When we walk, we know that we are walking. And when we eat, we know that we are eating." And this is the common human experience. We are rarely where we are. Our mind is always wandering off into a future that hasn't come and a past that is already gone. And psychologists and researchers have even found this. There was one experiment with college kids, of course, the most studied population. They had a little app on their phone, and occasionally throughout the day, the app would pop up and it would ask two simple questions. It would first ask, "What are you doing?" And then it would follow that question up with, "Are you aware that you are doing it?" And the researchers found about half the time, people were not aware of what they were doing. And we've all experienced this. We might be driving to work, thinking of all the things we have to do when we get to work. So, when we do hear the bell, it is a call to come home to this moment right here and right now. And the main way we do that is by what we sometimes call coming to our senses. So, when we ring the bell, this stimulates the sense of sound and it brings us into the present moment. And what I often like to point out is that we're told to be here now. We're told the power of now. And it's often presented as some monumental, spiritual feat, but it's really as grounded as your body is right now. All you have to do to be in the present moment, right here, right now, is tune into your senses. It's the mind that will take you to a past or a future, another place in the world. But it's the body that's breathing, moving, sensing, heart beating right here, right now, in this moment. So you can tune into the sense of hearing, just as you can tune into the sense of sight, of taste, of smell, and of touch. All of these things will bring you into the present moment. And that is our task. That is what ringing the bell is asking us to do. It's asking us to come right here, right now, and to touch reality as it is. And we do that, believe it or not, by coming into the body. That's why the Buddha said that the body is the gateway to enlightenment. Not just one of many gateways, but literally the gateway to enlightenment. So if you want to be here now, all you have to do is come home to the breath and come home to the body and come home to your senses. There's a haiku that I love. It's by Izumi Shikibu. And she wrote many centuries ago, "Should I leave this burning house of ceaseless thought and taste the pure rain's single truth falling upon my skin?" I love that imagery so much. Should I leave this burning house of ceaseless thought and taste the pure rain's single truth falling upon my skin? And that simple haiku demonstrates the journey of dropping out of the mind and coming into the body. So the basic idea is that with mindfulness and concentration comes vipassana, or insight. Or to add a little bit more Sanskrit, with smriti, or mindfulness, and samadhi, or concentration, comes vipassana, or insight. So that's the first thing that ringing the bell asks us to do. It asks us to come home to the body, home to the senses, and to come into this moment by tuning into the sound. We really wake up our ears. So fundamentally, the ringing of the bell is an invitation to listen. And one teaching I found from the spiritual teacher Adi Ashanti is that spirituality fundamentally is the art of listening. This is the process of becoming awake. And I think it's very different than in what we were learning when we were kids in school. When we hear this idea of paying attention, you must pay attention. We often think of the teacher who notices the class drifting off and they rap some ruler on the desk and makes a really loud noise and tells everyone to pay attention, to wake up. And you as the student, because you're drifting off, because you're most likely bored, you wrap your feet around the legs of the chair, you straighten up and tighten up. But that's not the listening. That's not the paying attention that we're encouraging. That tightening up is a focusing and a concentration. But what we want is an openness, an actual listening. Full body, mind, heart, and ears, all listening together. And this is something I've also found on the spiritual path, that listening is one of the hardest tasks there is as human beings. As one of my teachers, John Prendergast, once said, trying to listen to the world or even somebody in front of you is like trying to pay attention when there's a radio on at full blast in the mind. When the radio is on at full blast, that's the only thing you can listen to. The continuous ruminative thinking of the mind. You're trying to listen to somebody, they're telling you a story, the mind's like, wow, that's a really great story, but I have a much better story. It's actually a lot better, particularly because I'm in it, right? We often think, oh, that's a funny thing that they're saying. I should nod and smile. Oh, they're being sad in their story. I should express remorse. We're not even able fully to listen to somebody when our mind is continuously moving, continuously going. So this is why Eckhart Tolle does define spirituality as anything that goes beyond the endless thinking mind, anything that drops us out of the mind and brings us into the body. So it's not easy to listen. This is part of our practice, and this is part of our path. There's a story of a interviewer who goes in for a job interview. And the first question the interviewer asks the interviewee, they go, "So, walk me through your resume." And the person being interviewed goes, "I think my biggest weakness is listening." And this is the way things are. Usually we're so focused on our own thing, our own thinking, our own thought, we're not able to be fully present with the world around us. So we have to turn down the internal static of the mind. We have to calm the mind. which, if you get into Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, written over 2,000 years ago, this is exactly what he defined yoga as. Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Yoga is the mind becoming calm, the restraint of thought streams of the mind. This whole yoga path is designed to do one thing, and that is find a calm mind that allows us to fully be present in your body in this moment. So the writer Frederick Buchner, he wrote, if you've been to any of my yoga classes, you've probably heard me say this quote because I love it so much. Frederick Buchner writes, listen to your life, see it for the fathomless mystery that it is, in the boredom and pain of it, no less than in the excitement and gladness. Touch, taste, smell your way to the holy and hidden heart of it. Because in the last analysis, all moments are key moments, and life itself is grace. So when you listen to the bell, you're not just listening to a bell, you're listening to life. This life that happens right here and right now. And if you want to get in touch with life, your body is the gateway. Your senses are the gateway, which is why Frederick Buchner says, touch, taste, smell your way to the holy and hidden heart of it. Because in the last analysis, all moments are key moments, and life itself is grace. If you miss out on this moment, you miss out on life. This moment is exactly where life happens. Another thing you might notice when you do hear the ringing of the bell is, of course, the bell is struck, which I'll say is not the correct terminology, but we'll get into that in just a moment. But the bell is struck, and you hear a loud sound, and the sound slowly dissipates, right? It gets quieter and quieter and quieter. So it's not just like we're listening to a sound. We're listening to a sound to begin, and we're listening to the sound get quieter and quieter and quieter. And this is our path. This is the mind becoming calm. So you don't just, okay, time to pay attention. I'm here. I'm going to wait until the teacher starts speaking. This is, I'm going to be in this moment. I'm going to turn on my ears, and I'm going to listen to the sound of the bell as it rings and dissipates and dissipates and dissipates. And then once I cannot hear any sound anymore, I'll rest in that. I'll rest in that stillness. So the ringing of the bell is really an invitation to stillness. It's an invitation to let the mind be calm, to follow the sound until you simply rest in the stillness. There's even a story of a teacher who brought this into her elementary school classroom. And she said, okay, class, listen closely. I'm going to ring the bell. And if you listen very closely to the sound of the bell as it dissipates and as it quiets, you might be able to hear God. This probably was a Christian school. So sure enough, the teacher rings the bell. The bell dissipates and dissipates and dissipates. She does the exercise. And afterwards, one student raised their hand. And this student said, you know, when I listened to the bell become quiet, I didn't hear God. I became God. And I love that story so much. And Patanjali, in his Yoga Sutras, says the exactly same thing. In Sutra 1.2, he says, calm the mind. And in Sutra 1.3, he says, once the mind becomes calm, you will be able to fully rest in your true nature. Whether it's God or divine or love or light or source or awareness or whatever word it is that you use to point to the essence of you that goes beyond words, this is what we can rest in. So, again, still just talking about this bell. When I mentioned that we strike the bell, this is a bit of a misnomer. Because as we're saying, and this is something I learned from Thich Nhat Hanh, we don't strike the bell. Because strike the bell implies a certain amount of violence, right? I'm going to hit the bell and force it to do something. Just as we're encouraging mindfulness of listening, so too we're encouraging mindfulness of inviting the bell to ring. So the basic idea is we're not striking the bell, we're simply inviting it to ring. So if you do have a bell and you are about to ring it or invite it to ring, we do it with mindfulness. We do it with concentration. We gently, with mindfulness, pick up whatever you're using to invite the bell to ring. We hear the silence before the ringing. And when we do invite the bell to ring, we allow it to sing its song. And I really love that distinction, that we don't strike the bell. We invite it to ring with mindfulness. So just as it's not easy to listen, it's not easy to ring a bell either. We have to do it with mindfulness and with concentration. And I love this idea that we're just inviting a bell to ring, because there's many bells in this world. Here is just one particular bell. You might have your own bell at home. And every bell sounds a little different. And every bell has a slightly different song. So this is what we do with each other. We invite each other to ring or to sing, you might say. When we raise our children, we're looking for their unique song and encouraging them to bring their own harmony to the world. And even if you have a whole set of singing bowls, right, for some amazing sound healing, the sound that one has isn't any better than the sound that another has. Every bell is going to have its own unique song, just as everybody and every soul in everybody has its own unique song. And we can invite other people to sing. This is, in fact, one definition of love that I have heard, that love is learning the song in someone's heart and singing it to them when they have forgotten. And I just love that. Love is learning the heart, learning the song in someone's heart and singing it to them when they have forgotten. So it's an invitation to ring. And when we do pay attention, of course, we start in silence. We hear the bell ring. The bell rings, and it goes back to silence. So another thing that the bell teaches us is the difference between form and formless. Or how essentially, in a world of formlessness, forms appear, in this case, sound. And for a brief moment in time, that sound, that form exists, before, of course, it returns to formlessness. So we learn of this journey from formless to form and back to formlessness. So we learn about birth and death just by listening to the bell. And we can attribute this to ourselves as well. Right now, we are in this form. We are in this physical body. Before we were born, we were formless. After we die, we return to the realm of the formless. So there's a lovely quote by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. that exemplifies this teaching. And it goes like this. God made mud. God got lonesome. So God said to some of the mud, "Sit up. See all I've made," said God. "The hills, the sea, the sky, the stars." And I was some of the mud that got to sit up and look around. Lucky me, lucky mud. I, mud, sat up and saw what a nice job God had done. Nice going, God. Nobody but you could have done it. I certainly couldn't have. I feel very unimportant compared to you. The only way I can feel the least bit important is to think of all the mud that didn't even get to sit up and look around. I got so much and most mud got so little. Thank you for the honor. Now, mud lies down again and goes to sleep. What memories for mud to have. What interesting other kinds of sitting up mud I met. I loved everything I saw. Good night. And this is one way to view ourselves. We are essentially walking and talking mud, with the privilege to look around, to see other forms currently walking and talking mud, experiencing this realm of form before we return to the realm of formless. So even the simple thing as ringing of the bell teaches us about birth and death, about form and formless. And even when we say form, you might get really caught up in this basic idea of physical matter, or what we might call materialism. But that's the other lesson we have to learn from this bell. When we hear this bell ring, what are we hearing? We're hearing energy. We're hearing vibration. That's all that sound is, just vibrating air particles. And this is what life is. Although we feel ourselves be physical beings interacting with other physical matter, we know, and physics confirms this, that everything is energy. So even we too are energy. Everything is a vibration. Everything goes in cycles. And this is something that's really particularly unique about the yogic path, is because energy and vibration and chanting and singing are fundamental. So we even have this phrase, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And I love this because it's like, I wonder what that word could be. What do you think this word could be that was with God? And I like to say that that word was Om. O-M, A-U-M, this magical word, this fundamental vibration that underlies everything in the universe. So this ringing of the bell is an invitation to get in touch with life, to get in touch with the energy that is all around us, that we have the privilege, as walking and talking mud, to get in touch with. So when we think about the question, what is life? Right? What is this life that we are in? And I would say, life is this. It's the ringing. And as we get out of the mind and into our bodies, we have to let go of our mental concepts that prevent us from touching reality as it is. Life is not the word ringing. Life is this vibration, this energy vibration of ringing. This word we have ringing is just a concept. And our task is to drop out of all conceptual thinking in order to touch reality as it is. As the common metaphor goes, the word water will not quench your thirst. The word food will not satisfy your hunger. And we live in a very cognitive-centric society that encourages us all to live in this life of the mind, but the life of the mind is one of illusion, one of conceptual thinking. So another quote from Eckhart Tolle is that we have to stop thinking about our life situation and start paying attention to your life. And it's your life situation that exists in time. It's your life situation that says, oh, I didn't sleep too well tonight, and I need to have some cup of coffee, and I have so much to do later today. This is all a situation. This is all something that exists in time. But your life exists in the here, in the now, in this moment. So we have to understand that spirituality is an invitation to life. It's a recognition that there will always be a difference between the explained world and the experienced one, right? The experienced one is in our bodies. It's the ringing of the bell. The explained world is the concepts that we use to separate ourselves from this living and breathing apparatus that we call the earth. So we drop out of that conceptual thinking. We don't want to confuse the menu for the dinner. That's another common metaphor that you'll find. A lot of people eat the menu and end up not very satisfied. We're so caught up in conceptual thinking that we miss out on life. Now, the other fun thing to think about, again, going back to ringing this bell, we already talked about the energy. We can also think, what is the energy doing? It's radiating out. It's radiating out in every direction. So this is another lesson of energy. Just as the sun radiates its light and its warmth and the bell radiates its own energy, so too us as human beings, we radiate our own energy. We're all connected. We're relational beings. If you were walking down the street, for example, and you were to smile at the person walking by you, they might not smile back, but their mirror neurons for smiling will start to get reactive and they are more likely to smile at the next person that they see. So we do even use this term energy or vibe for this basic idea that people do give off a certain vibration, a certain feeling, a certain somatic sense. And this is another important piece of our path. If we want to create peace in the world, we have to create peace within ourselves. If we want to be an instrument of peace, we have to begin with ourselves. We have to understand that we are radiating out an energy. So I remember many years ago when I was studying Buddhism at Kopan Monastery in Nepal, we were sitting in the meditation hall, and outside the hall, every night, the monks there were just chanting. And hours into the night, we're trying to meditate outside the meditation hall, chanting. And finally, somebody asked our teacher, like, what are they chanting about? Right? What are they chanting all night about? And our teacher responded quite simply that they're chanting for world peace. And I think it's easy to think that just chanting for world peace on top of a mountain isn't going to change anything. But I think that involves a deep misunderstanding that if we want to create peace in the world, we have to create peace in ourselves. If we want to stop war in the world, we have to stop the war in ourselves. So those monks at Kopan Monastery, their energy isn't wasted. First of all, it's in me. And I also seek to radiate their message of world peace wherever I go. And if you ever have an opportunity to go to Nepal or North India or other places with really a strong Tibetan Buddhist lineage, I encourage you to notice what they do with their environment. We've all seen those prayer flags floating on the stupas, right? We've all seen those prayer wheels. And the basic idea is this, is that life is sacred. And as the wind passes through the prayer flags, it carries the prayers with it. As you spin the prayer wheel, it spins your prayer out and radiating out in every direction. So this is why there are prayer flags on Mount Everest, the highest mountain in the world, because that Mount Everest is radiating peace and prayer everywhere that we go. So we can also think, when we hear this bell, the radiating of energy. And when I was in Nepal is when I actually purchased this bell. And I purchased it in a Tibetan refugee camp, some people that had fled Tibet from prosecution by the Chinese. And, you know, purchasing it probably at a wildly inflated price made me feel very good, because I knew that my money was going to a community and people that needed it. And this is another lesson that we can take. There are many different ways to practice spirituality in the world. There is, of course, the ascetic life or the monastic life, where you absolve yourself of all worldly possessions and you rely strictly on the donations and giving and dana or generosity of others. And if this path resonates with you, I highly encourage you to do it. But most people on the spiritual path that I meet, most people that come to my classes or my trainings, they want to find that hybrid. They want to find that union of living in the world and having a genuine spiritual life. And part of what that means is we are probably making money and we're probably spending money. And we can do that with the same intention that we want to do with anything else. So money is a flow, and it's conduit, just as these wisdom teachings are a flow. And I'm simply a conduit. I didn't invent these teachings. I'm just sharing them with you so that you share them with others. So every step can be done with intention, and even how we spend money can be done with intention. Is it part of a cause? Is it part of a business? Is it part of a person that we want to support in this world? And then one final lesson I'll have you take from the bell. Started with another story. Now I was meditating at a center in Thailand this time. And Thailand's a little bit more strict with their Theravadan Buddhist tradition. So every morning we would wake up at 4 a.m. and we'd wake up to this bell. And they always had a very strict way of ringing the bell. And when we go up to the meditation hall, I would look at this bell, and it's a very oddly shaped bell. It wasn't like a singing bowl or a gong or anything like that. So eventually, after we were out of silence, I was finally able to ask my teacher, "Hey, what's with that bell? Why is it shaped like that?" And our teacher replied that that bell that they were ringing every morning to wake people up to go to the meditation hall was essentially an empty bombshell. This is in Thailand, which is very close to Cambodia and Vietnam. And in both Cambodia and Vietnam, from the different wars that have taken place throughout history, there are bombs, bombshells, unexploded bombs in the earth. And they've been repurposed in all sorts of different ways. And I thought this was inspiring in a lot of different ways, that an object, in this case, that was produced and created for violence and destruction was changed and transformed to an instrument of awakening. So every morning we woke up to the sound of this bell, to the sound of essentially this bombshell that had been repurposed. So this is another lesson we find on the path. You've probably heard the motto, no mud, no lotus, right? The lotus grows in little ponds, in the muckiest of the ponds. And as soon as it hits the water, it blossoms. And this is a metaphor for the spiritual path, that we're not here to get rid of the negative. That will never work. We're here to integrate it. We're here to transform it. We're here to digest it. So actually, suffering, pain, challenges, this is like gasoline to our spiritual path. This is like fuel to the fire. Pain, suffering, challenges are inevitable in life. This is the first noble truth. And it's there for a reason. It's there for you to use it and transform it. So there is a Zen saying, for example, that every weed is a treasure. I love that. Every weed is a treasure. Because those of you that are gardeners, what do you do with the weeds? You don't throw them in the trash, throw them in the compost. So this is what we're here to do. You're here to compost the proverbial mud, the proverbial dirt, the proverbial pain and suffering and challenges in our life. You're here to compost it and digest it and let it be fuel for our growth. So even the most painful experiences of our life can fuel our awakening and can fuel a transformation, just as a bomb can be transformed into an instrument of vibrational awakening. So you might be wondering why I've spent all this time talking about something as simple as this bell. And I do that for two main reasons. One, every meditation talk I'll do will start with a bell. So when you do hear that bell ring, you can think of any of the things that I just mentioned. This is a call to pay attention, to find stillness, to become God, to transform our trauma into awakening. And at the same time, with this basic idea that with smriti and samadhi comes vipassana, or with mindfulness and concentration comes insight, this is another huge lesson that I've found. When we do learn to pay attention, is that you can pay attention to anything in this life and you will gain insight. You will gain wisdom. Bell is just one thing to focus on, one thing to bring our attention to gain all sorts of insight about the world. And I've found if you bring mindfulness and concentration to anything, insight or vipassana will naturally arise. Prajna or wisdom will naturally arise. So this is just one of the reasons we focus so much on the breath. Just as we can learn so much from something as simple as a bell, we can learn so much about this world from listening to our breath. And during these Dharma talks, I'll be sharing all sorts of teachings that I've learned from my master's in East-West psychology and from the courses and trainings I've taken around the world. But I'll tell you what, the greatest teacher that I have found is quite literally our own breath. It's such a profound experience of being with the breath that I'll probably have an entire Dharma talk on simply listening to the breath itself and all the things that we can learn from the breath. But again, the breath is just one thing that we can bring our mindfulness and concentration to. We can also listen to the body as it moves. So just as we can have breathing meditation and eating meditation, we can have walking meditation. And that's the key thing about mindfulness. It's a very common word people use a lot nowadays. And one thing I encourage is that when we do say we want to be mindful, we're always mindful of something. We have to be mindful of breathing, mindful walking, mindful eating. So mindful walking is a really incredible practice to bring into your spiritual path. I remember one of my teachers in Thailand, he was teaching us walking meditation, and it was so slow and so mindful. And I just remember him always saying, lifting, moving, placing, lifting, moving, placing, lift. And then for hours of the day, we would be walking, lifting, moving, placing. And even as I was doing this walking meditation, I was even thinking about how we use the word step for walking. And step, you know, it's like something you see in an instruction manual. Step one, do this. Step two, do this. So rarely do we do an activity specifically for the activity, right? We don't walk to walk. We walk to get somewhere. It's a step onto the next thing. But what would it look like to breathe just to breathe, to walk just to walk? Right? And it really transforms our experience. So another teaching that you find from Thich Nhat Hanh is that he says there's two ways to wash the dishes. The first way to wash the dishes is to get clean dishes. The second way to wash the dishes is wash the dishes to wash the dishes. And you can imagine the shift in awareness and the shift in perspective from these two different approaches, right? If you're washing the dishes to get clean dishes, it will be a frustrating process, right? Oh my God, 20 dirty dishes over here, no clean dishes over here. Okay, oh, I got to do this one, and now I got to do this one. I'm not even halfway, and then this is so frustrating. But what would it look like to wash the dishes just to wash the dishes, right? And then it's that mindfulness that we use, just as when we ring the bell, just as when we take a step, we feel the plate in our hands, we feel the warm water as we dunk it in, and we get to experience the satisfaction and the transformation of going from dirty to clean each time. We get to feel the warm water, we get to see the bubbles play with the light. So this is the act and process of paying attention. Our entire world transforms. Whether you're paying attention to your breath, whether you're paying attention to the ringing of the bell, or whether you pay attention to washing the dishes, it transforms our life. So too, walking meditation, just taking each step. And it's so profound to walk just to walk, to breathe just to breathe. And so you can have mindful breathing just as you can have mindful walking, just as you can have mindful eating and mindful drinking. So the next time you do take a drink, know that you are taking the drink. Drink your tea mindfully. Drink your water mindfully. Feel it enter into your body. So this is what I found. If we pay attention to anything in our life, it will transform our world. In fact, just a couple days ago, I got to see one of my favorite teachers, Anne Lamott, and she was speaking from her new book, and all she did was read the first page and a half of her book, and I was like, that's exactly what I'm going to talk about in this week's Dharma Talk. So this is just the first paragraph of her latest book, and she writes this. My husband said something a few years ago that I often quote. 80% of everything that is true and beautiful can be experienced on any 10-minute walk. I love that. I'll say it again. 80% of everything that is true and beautiful can be experienced on any 10-minute walk. Even in the darkest and most devastating times, love is nearby if you know what to look for. It does not always appear at first to be lovely, but instead may take the form of a hot mess or a snoring old dog or someone you have sworn to never, ever forgive, for a possibly very good reason, if you ask me. But mixed in will also be familiar signs of love, wings, good-hearted people, cats when they are in the right mood, a spray of wildflowers, a cup of tea. 80% of everything that is true and beautiful can be experienced on any 10-minute walk. And I think we know this. I think we know what matters most in this life, and that we can't experience it if we go on a 10-minute walk. We'll experience the beauty of the sun, the smell of the trees. We might even encounter somebody in this world who is suffering, which also matters. To alleviate the suffering of others is also true and important on this path. And this is part of our practice. As the common saying goes, there's a saying in the Zen tradition that when you look at a garden, a Zen garden, it's not empty, it's abundant in simplicity. So the practices that we do, they're so simple. Notice your breath, notice your step, because in that simple act, we come into the present moment and we can learn so much about what is true and beautiful in this world. And if you don't believe me, I'll just offer one final example. You can pay attention to anything you want in life and you will gain tremendous vipassana or insight. For example, here is a piece of paper. You might be thinking, there's nothing I could possibly learn from a piece of paper by bringing my attention to it. But I have to tell you, there's so much to learn. First, what you may just notice about a simple piece of paper is there's a left side and a right side. Now, these sides are, of course, intertwined, are they not? I cannot take the right side of this piece of paper and go over there, just as I cannot take the left side of this piece of paper and go over there. So even a piece of paper teaches us about the duality of life, that life implies death, good implies evil, north implies south, light implies dark. And one is not separate from the other. So we say life and death, giving and receiving, light and dark, good and evil, they are interdependent. And there's another famous teacher who would often take an empty piece of paper and he would draw a bird on it. And he would say, what do you see here in this piece of paper? And of course, many of these students would say, oh, I see a bird. And he would say, no, this is the sky with a bird passing through it. And that's a simple lesson that we so easily get caught up in the contents of our awareness rather than awareness itself. We so easily identify with our thoughts rather than that which is aware of the thoughts. So not only might you see awareness and our spacious awareness that is possible in a piece of paper, but you might also see a flower. That's what Thich Nhat Hanh says. Doesn't take a poet to see a flower in the piece of paper. Because, of course, where did this paper come from? It came from the trees. Where did the trees come from? It came from the unification of the water and the earth. So within such a piece of paper lies the entire cosmos. You can see a cloud in the piece of paper. You can see a flower in the piece of paper. Within this simple thing contains everything. So this is the path. This is our spiritual path, recognizing there's nowhere we need to go. There's nothing we need to do. This is the practice of becoming wise. And I think it's so different than what we were taught. We were taught in order to gain knowledge in this world, we have to take external knowledge and stuff it into our own brains, right? We have to go to the library and read the thousands of books and get PhDs and all of the things in order to learn about this life. But what we learn in the practice, what we learn in the path is that life is right here. And we can learn all that there is to know about life by getting in touch with it exactly as it is. So Donna Faulds writes this, another favorite poet of mine. This is what I have to say to you. You know all that you need to know. You already are all that you need to be. It remains only for you to recognize and acknowledge who you are, what you know, and the powerful presence that is awake within you. You think of yourself as fragile, but you are in fact strong. You sometimes feel alone, but you are in fact connected through spirit to all beings. The power of God works through you, making all things possible. Believe in this connection. Believe in yourself. That is all you need to do, for all is well. When we do pay attention, we realize everything is already here. As we sometimes say, enlightenment is never more than a breath away, because it is, of course, touching reality as it is. Dropping out of the mind, dropping out of all conceptual thinking, and touching this moment exactly as it is. And when we do, we realize heaven is right here. The kingdom of God is right here. The pure land of the Buddha is right here. There are miracles all around us. There are wonders all around us. This existence is a miracle, just as your body is a miracle, and your body is a wonder. Walking is a wonder. Breathing is a wonder. It's true that the first noble truth is that life is suffering. But in Buddhist psychology, they also teach that all the conditions for happiness are already right here. All you need to be happy is already right here. If you have a healthy body, that's a reason to be happy. If you have ears in good condition, that can hear the birds sing, that can hear the bells ring, that's a reason to be happy. If you can open your eyes and see the beautiful blue sky, that's a reason to be happy. There are miracles all around us, wonders all around us, and of course, in us as well. This next poem is by Walt Whitman. Why, who makes much of a miracle? As to me, I know of nothing else but miracles. Whether I walk the streets of Manhattan, or dart my sight over the roofs of houses toward the sky, or wade with naked feet along the beach just in the edge of the water, or stand under trees in the woods, or talk by day with anyone I love, or sleep in the bed at night with anyone I love, or sit at the table at dinner with the rest, or look at strangers opposite me riding in the car, or watch honeybees busy around the hive of a summer forenoon, or animals feeding in the fields, or birds, or the wonderfulness of insects in the air, or the wonderfulness of the sundown, or of stars shining so quiet and bright, or the exquisite, delicate, thin curve of the new moon in spring. These, with the rest, one and all, are to me miracles, the whole referring, yet each distinct in its place. To me, every hour of the light and dark is a miracle. Every cubic inch of space is a miracle. Every square yard of the surface of the earth is spread with the same. Every foot of the interior swarms with the same. To me, the sea is a continual miracle. The fishes that swim, the rocks, the motion of the waves, the ships with men in them. What stranger miracles are there? So we're called to slow down, to really pay attention to this life, to see that everything is already right here. We hear more in silence. Do more by stopping. Discover more by sitting. Learn more in nothing. Feel more by loosening. Become more by lessening. Gain more by giving. Arrive sooner by slowing. So thank you so much for sharing your practice and presence with me today. Namaste.